you can go to democracynow.org. And that does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Maria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Mary Conlon. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. You can catch Democracy Now! Also on YouTube, at democracynow.org, on Instagram, on Facebook, and way beyond. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
Ursula K. Nguyen, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Coming this Monday, January 3rd at 2 p.m. on the Monday Sampler.
Out of the pages of the world's greatest comic magazine come the adventures of the Fantastic Four.
A radio adaptation of the original Fantastic Four magazines that originally appeared almost 60 years ago. We will be presenting issue 3 of the Fantastic Four, The Coming of the Submariner. So tune in this Monday at 2 p.m. and hear Stan Lee himself say,
"In one sweeping motion, he removes his outer garments and stands revealed as the legendary ruler of the sea, the invincible Prince Namor, the Submariner."
So face front, all true believers, and tune in this Monday at 2 p.m. as the Monday Sampler will present issue 3 of the Fantastic Four featuring Stan Lee. And that's right here on Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, frigid winter weather will end one year and start the next, where we could see some icy roads. As a new COVID variant surges, you could soon have some legal protection against surprise medical bills from the emergency room. And an Oregon member of Congress reflects on 2021. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 30th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us. We're in for another cold and damp evening. Tonight we could see some more snow and rain with a low temperature below the freezing mark tomorrow night. There's a good chance of significant snow in the Salem area and Clark County, Washington, with mostly rain predicted for the Portland metro area. A man died from hypothermia on Christmas Day. Family members say the 76-year-old Portland man, Henry Steele, was discovered dead 2 days after he went missing. He was heading home from the Veterans Administration Hospital in Southwest Portland. This comes as the warming centers in our area close this afternoon. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade has more on the story.
As today's temperature is warmed enough to move out of what is considered extreme weather conditions, the 7 larger 24-hour warming centers in Multnomah County closed today at 2 p.m. The county had opened warming centers to aid those living outside as the greater Portland area and most of the state braces through a week of freezing temperatures and debilitating winter conditions. The locations that closed this afternoon are the Oregon Convention Center, the Portland Building, Reynolds High School, the East Portland Community Center, Market Street Facility, Mount Scott Community Center, and the Salvation Army Facility. If freezing temperatures or extreme conditions return, all 7 locations are poised to reopen to their previous 24-hour status and will need volunteers to help assist those seeking shelter indoors. Warming centers generally can house upwards of 150 people, and volunteers help by handing out food, hygiene products, monitor sleeping stations, and cleaning and disinfecting throughout their shift. The shelters provide overnight emergency refuge, ensuring that people don't have to sleep outside in freezing weather. During severe cold conditions, Those centers can expand their emergency services to 24-hour availability, provided enough volunteer power is available. Typically, these shelters offer necessities such as hot food, drinks, and a place to sleep, as well as emergency gear such as tents and sleeping bags. These services are provided by Transition Projects, a partner organization with Multnomah County that works to house the houseless community. For up-to-date statuses on shelters that are remaining open and general cold weather shelter information, people are advised to call 211. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
Today, Oregon's COVID-19 case count has risen past its previous peak with 2,948 new cases. Health experts say the extremely contagious Omicron variant is driving the new wave of infections. Meantime, Oregon Health and Sciences University has revised its prediction of possible hospitalizations from the surge. OHSU data scientist Peter Graven initially said Oregon hospitalizations due to the variant could be expected to reach between 2,400 to 3,000 in early to mid-February based on data collected from European countries where Omicron had taken a hold. These findings were released on December 17th and were dependent on behavior and the number of people who received booster vaccination shots. According to more recent and accurate data, Graven has reduced that prediction to approximately 1,250 hospitalizations in February. That is only slightly higher than September's pandemic peak at 1,187 COVID hospitalizations. Much of the updated information comes from Denmark, where studies are showing that Omicron hospitalization rates are 70% lower than those caused by the Delta variant. OHSU's new model reduced expected hospitalizations from Omicron to be 30% instead of 48%. Health experts warn even these reduced figures could still overwhelm hospitals and other healthcare provider facilities and compromise access to services for patients with strokes, heart attacks, vehicle crashes, and other life-threatening conditions. Graven says continued protocols for mask wearing and avoiding large gatherings are going to be needed to maintain the current model's predictions. Though Omicron has shown so far to result in lower numbers of serious illnesses than other COVID-19 variants, its rate of transmission is higher, with every individual becoming infected likely to spread it to an average of 8.5 other people. National studies have found that about 1 in 5 emergency room visits result in surprise medical bills. But a landmark new medical consumer protection law takes effect in the new year. Mike Moen reports despite legal challenges, the No Surprises Act will become law on New Year's Day.
Pictures of large medical bills are sometimes shared on social media to show how patients can be blindsided by unexpected costs for care. But as the new year begins, consumers will be offered federal protections to avoid health care sticker shock. On January 1st, the No Surprises Act takes effect. Supporters say it will block out-of-network providers from sending large bills to patients who didn't choose who cared for them in an emergency situation. Patricia Kelmar of the Public Interest Research Group says getting these statements in the mail can be very hard for the many Americans who don't have much savings to cover the expenses.
And when you think about the average out-of-network bill for anesthesia is $1,200, these costs can create a real burden on consumers and can lead to medical debt.
She notes that under the law, your bill cannot be sent to collections if you have a complaint under review. Groups like the American Medical Association have sued the federal government, saying while they back the law, they oppose the arbitration process drawn up by regulators. And the North Dakota Health Information Management Association worries it could force smaller providers out of business. The statewide group says consumer protections are needed, but argues the process caters to large providers who have more patient volume. But Kelmar contends the law is trying to establish reasonable fees based on average contracted rates in a community.
We're seeing higher than average, higher than market prices from many specialties that use surprise billing as a way to increase their profits.
And she adds more ERs are being staffed by private equity firms who bring in contracted specialists. Groups like PIRG say while the law will make a difference, they have suggested changes of their own. Kelmar says it addresses air ambulance service from out-of-pocket providers, but leaves out ground transport.
Your ground transportation, the ambulance that we think of when we call 911, those bills from an out-of-network ambulance could still be your financial responsibility.
According to federal estimates, the law will impact roughly 10 million surprise medical bills each year. Nearly 30 states have similar protections in place, but policy experts say they're often limited in scope. North Dakota is among the states without these protections. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
An investigation finds that a third police officer is responsible for an information leak that led to media incorrectly reporting that Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty was involved in a hit-and-run accident. OPB obtained a letter from October about how the false allegation involved Ken Lee, Carrie Ottoman, and Brian Hunsicker, who was president of the Portland Police Association at the time. The Portland police investigation centered on a 911 call on March 3rd, in which a caller accused Hardesty of hitting her vehicle in Southeast Portland and leaving the scene. Though the caller incorrectly ID'd Hardesty as the suspect, the police investigation found that officers leaked the information as fact. The year began with an attack on the U.S. Capitol. It ends with a pandemic surge. I talked to Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici for her thoughts on 2021 and her hopes for 2022. Give me your thoughts about 2021 as a year, all the trials and tribulations, the highlights, the lowlights of this year.
Wow, how much time do we have? there were many. I think everyone was ready to turn the page on 2020 with the pandemic. And you know, I was excited to turn that page, and then January 6th happened. So I have to say that that was a truly low point, not only for 2021, but for close to probably my lifetime and for a long time to come, to have an attack like that on the US Capitol. So that was definitely the low point. And the high point, I was honored to attend the inauguration of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. And that was another, you know, we're turning the page, we're gonna have a new start here. And then helping to pass things like the American Rescue Plan to really help people in need. Again, another high point when we see people come together. I got to go to the bill signing as well, just recently at the White House for the bipartisan infrastructure bill. With more than 800 people there, Democrats, Republicans, members of Congress, mayors, community members, labor leaders, workers who are going to be building infrastructure. So seeing the country come together and accomplishing something so important was, I have to say, another high point. And I'm looking forward to one more when Build Back Better passes the Senate.
Yeah. You think that will be definitely within the next couple of weeks, or?
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
I sure hope so. One more thing I want to add to Annette about high points was that I had the honor of going to the climate conference in Glasgow with several members of the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, along with the Speaker of the House, Speaker Pelosi, and just understanding the seriousness of the climate crisis and seeing the administration's presence there, from, you know, Secretary Granholm, our Secretary of Energy, former Senator now and Secretary Kerry, who's now sort of leading the efforts, Secretary Buttigieg with transportation, back to our initial conversation about how transportation is an important issue to address as we transition to clean energy. Seeing the commitment of the United States to really take a leadership role there. And when we talk about climate change and transitioning to clean energy, we're talking about jobs, good jobs, and also protecting the health and lives of people. As we look at the consequences of severe weather events and more wildfires and more severe storms, I mean, people are losing their lives. Mm-hmm. So as we look at the commitment of the United States to really take that leadership role and all the jobs that will be created, and I've been working, of course, on the workforce issues to make sure people can get the skills to do those great jobs, another high point as well to see that U.S. leadership shine through.
Now, what are you looking forward to next year, and what are you hoping to see from Congress next year?
Well, I hope we can get back to treating each other with respect. That is something that I take very seriously in my role as a policymaker. We are there to identify the needs of our constituents and work together to find solutions. We may have different ideas about how we solve those problems and different ideas about the role of government in solving those problems, but we need to work together in a way that is respectful of each other and respectful of our differences. And so some of the things I'm looking forward to working on are, again, making sure higher education is affordable and accessible. My work on the science committee to make sure that we are making those targeted investments in research and technology and making sure that we are, with our environmental work, addressing the needs in the community and making sure that that transition to clean energy is a just transition and helping people get into good jobs. So I'm looking forward to that work going into the new year.
Yeah, certainly there have been a lot of positive developments in the economy, with unemployment is certainly very low now compared to how it was at the beginning of the pandemic.
Correct.
We've gotten a lot of jobs coming back. But then right now we also have higher inflation and some supply chain issues. So what's your advice to Oregonians getting through this holiday season?
Well, I certainly know that, you know, when we hear about inflation, it's tough when you go to buy something and you see, well, it's a little more than I expected to pay. And why is that happening? And there are a lot of reasons for that, mostly pandemic related overall with the supply chain. But as we ramp up U.S. manufacturing and as we really look at what's happening with the Build Back Better investments, people are going to see, you know, working families, they're going to see their costs go down. They're going to see childcare is going to be less expensive and they're going to be able to find it. And then with universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds. So the people are going to have their expenses reduced. Of course, most people in the country will see their taxes go down or not up at all. The Build Back Better investments are paid for by making sure that those at the top are paying their fair share. One more thing I wanted to mention as well that is relevant to this conversation is with Build Back Better, there are some robust investments in affordable housing. And that is something that has come up across Northwest Oregon, no matter where I am, even before the pandemic. We don't have enough affordable housing. And we know that it's in short supply. And when people can find housing, it's not affordable. So making sure that we are building more affordable housing and making more people eligible to get that affordable housing is going to help solve these problems as well. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. I do, again, understand the concern people feel when they're shopping, but Build Back Better is really going to help with that. And some of it is coming from the sort of pent-up demand when people have been, you know, in sectors hit hard by the pandemic, and people are doing a lot more online shopping than they have been, and things are just sitting in ships off the coast, primarily off LA. So we're working on expediting that and speeding up things.
That was Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici. You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio at 6. At 7, it's the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather will be rainy, turning to a snowy mix by morning, an overnight low around 34. And tomorrow it will be colder, with a 40% chance of snow, the high reaching 36 and the low down to 24. The cold's going to linger on through Saturday, when we could reach a low of 22. Today in history, on this date in 1936, auto workers began one of the first sit-down strikes in the United States at the General Motors Fisher Body Plant No. 1 in Flint, Michigan. They were striking to win recognition of the United Auto Workers Union. The quote of the day is from then-Michigan Governor Frank Murphy. Resisting pressure to break the strike, he said, "The state authorities will not take sides. They are here only to protect the public peace." President Biden is set to talk with Russia about Ukraine, and a jury finds Ghislaine Maxwell guilty on 5 of 6 counts. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's the latest edition of 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
No country has the right to dictate borders, to bully smaller countries, to intimidate, to coerce, to pursue their own interests.
State Department spokesman Ned Price says the U.S. wants to peacefully resolve the conflict in Ukraine, where Russia has amassed troops, prompting fears of a military invasion. President Joe Biden is expected to speak by phone today to Russian President Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin's request. Foreign policy expert Stephen Pfeiffer with the Brookings Institution believes diplomacy could help defuse the situation.
It would be better to talk than to have what could turn out to be the biggest land war in Europe since World War II breakout.
Russia contends the troops are there for military exercises and denies plans to invade, which Pfeiffer says is possible.
I tend to think that this is more towards bluff than an actual intention for a real invasion, because I calculate the cost as significant for Moscow. But Mr. Putin has his own logic.
Biden already warned Putin the U.S. and European allies will respond with economic sanctions and military support should Russia invade. A group of former executive branch lawyers asked the Supreme Court Wednesday to reject former President Donald Trump's efforts to block his records from the House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack, arguing the need to pursue facts outweighs Trump's claims of executive privilege. New polling shows House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has a nearly 50% job approval rating among independents, putting the California Republican 8 percentage points ahead of President Joe Biden. The Gallup poll also found McCarthy's overall approval slightly higher than Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. McCarthy is among those predicting a red wave in 2022, as the GOP needs just 5 seats to regain the House majority it lost in 2018.
It's no longer will the competition of competitive seats be small. It'll be more than 70 Democrats that would be competitive. It could be one of the biggest election losses for Democrats.
23 House Democrats are retiring or running for another office in 2022, compared to 13 Republicans. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says the current weekly average of new COVID cases is roughly 240,000 cases per day, up 60% over last week.
The rapid increase in cases we are seeing across the country is in large part a reflection of the exceptionally transmissible Omicron variant.
Meanwhile, the White House is considering a potential vaccine mandate for domestic travel. A federal jury in New York found Ghislaine Maxwell guilty on 5 of 6 counts related to her role in Jeffrey Epstein's sexual abuse of minor girls. Epstein killed himself in prison in 2019, 1 month after a federal indictment on sex trafficking charges. Maxwell, his confidant and former girlfriend, was arrested a year later. The 60-year-old faces up to 65 years in prison. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A Western state is defying the U.S. Supreme Court on Crow tribal hunting rights. Eric Olatis reports, even though hunting elk has spiritual and cultural significance for the Crow people, for more than a century, the state of Wyoming has refused to recognize their treaty.
Wyoming will appeal a recent district court decision affirming Crow tribal hunting rights granted under treaties signed in the 19th century, rights recently affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Dan Leverenz with the Native American Rights Fund says tribal leaders were very clear about maintaining hunting rights before they agreed to move into a reservation on just a portion of lands they had occupied for centuries.
The Crow tribe made a deal, and they gave up millions and millions of acres of their traditional lands. And one of the things that they specifically negotiated for, we need to be able to hunt throughout our lands, even if we're going to give most of those lands up, and that was part of the deal.
Wyoming has refused to recognize treaty hunting rights for more than a century, but in 2019, a case involving Clavin Herrera of the Crow tribe, prosecuted for hunting elk in the Bighorn National Forest, made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Citing previous lower court rulings, Wyoming argued that the state needed to enforce hunting laws for conservation purposes. The state also claimed that national forest lands were occupied and therefore subject to hunting regulations. Leverant says the conservation landscape has changed dramatically since the lower court rulings 25 years ago, with elk numbers now strong. He adds the term occupied at the time of the treaty is not equivalent to the federal government creating a national forest.
And the Supreme Court said, no, you've got that all wrong. Occupied would have meant settled, people living there, working there. And the national forest laws actually prevent that. You can't build a home in a national forest. You can't live there.
Leverance notes Wyoming's ongoing prosecution of tribal hunters has created a chilling effect. If members want to exercise this important right to feed their family, they put themselves at significant risk.
The act of hunting has spiritual and cultural significance for Crow Indians. Elk have spiritual and cultural significance and provide a primary source of food for a number of people on the Crow Reservation.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A southeastern Alaska tribe plans to pilot a broadband program. And we remember 2 elders who passed away in 2021. Here's the latest National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Southeast Alaska's regional tribal government will pilot its new broadband internet program in the island community of Wrangell. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
Last year, the Federal Communications Commission opened up a special program to allow rural tribes to secure broadband licenses to improve connectivity. Hundreds of tribes applied, more than a third in Alaska. The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska announced on December 17th that it got its license. Chris Cropley, one of Tlingit and Haida's network architects, says it's for the 2.5 gigahertz spectrum, the same tech used by cell phone LTE networks.
We're starting in Wrangell. It's the perfect, it's the Goldilocks.
The tribe is calling its broadband service Tidal Network. It'll just be home internet, not mobile data service. But all the same, it'll need to build its own towers so that wireless internet can be broadcast directly to homes and businesses that don't already have reliable internet access. Once the service is in place, Tlingit and Haida will be required to defend it, meaning they have to offer internet service to 80% of the area's population within the first 2 years of holding the license and full coverage after 5 years. Once the details are worked out, it'll operate as a subscription service. Cropley says the goal is to provide the best possible internet at the lowest possible price. Digital literacy education will be an integral part of the program.
It's teaching people how to use it, making sure they're using it correctly. We're not just dropping internet off on your roof and saying good luck.
With cooperation from Wrangell's local government and tribal government, Cropley says Tlingit and Haida hopes to have the network up and running by spring of 2022. I'm Sage Smiley.
Today, we remember 2 elders who passed away in 2021. Earl Oldperson died of cancer in October at age 92. Aaron Bolton attended the funeral in Montana for the longtime spiritual and political leader of the Blackfeet Nation.
Oldperson's friends and family reflected on his accomplishments as a leader, like meeting many U.S. presidents, serving as the president of the National Congress of American Indians, and working on national legislation to improve life for indigenous people across the U.S. Oldperson's nephew, Kenny Scabbyrobe, said love was always at the core of his message.
He fought very hard in every way to keep our religion and our way of life alive.
Oldperson's family spoke about how they would carry on his efforts, including his grandson, Arlen Edwards.
Grandpa, to learn these songs and to teach them. Because that was important to you. And I'm going to do my best to honor people the way you told us to do.
As Edwards sang his grandfather's going home song, family carried Oldperson's casket away. Outside, hundreds of people lined Central Avenue as the procession moved through Browning, followed by a group of horses, one without a rider, to signify Oldperson's last ride.
We also remember Marcella LeBeau, a nurse who served in the U.S. Army Nurse Corps during World War II. She treated soldiers at the Battle of the Bulge and was later awarded a Medal of Honor by Belgium. Here she is in a 2019 interview with National Native News.
I'm a veteran of World War II, and that was one of the greatest honors and privileges of my life.
LeBeau served as a nurse when she returned home to the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota and served on the Tribal Council. She was instrumental in banning smoking in tribal chambers and was outspoken in trying to get Wounded Knee Medals of Honor revoked. LeBeau was 102 when she passed away in November. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158.
Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Mike Moen, and Eric Olatis. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning in to Coast Range Radio, a radio program of the Coast Range Association. My name is Andrew. Send us an email. We want to hear from our listeners. Ask us some questions. Let us know what you think of the show. You can reach me at Andrew at